Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. It may be obvious to you that the President of the United States uses the term fake news to disparage any journalism that's critical of him, most of it based on reporting that is 100% real. And it's a story that's become kind of stale, right? Trump calls something fake news, so what else is new? So the reaction to the president posting a set of fake news awards last night has been largely a shrug. But maybe that's dangerous. Maybe that's just the kind of normalization that erodes democracy drop by drop, like the frog that doesn't realize it's being boiled to death. So maybe it's really important that two Republican senators, and as far as I can see, only two, put their hands up yesterday to take it very seriously. One was John McCain, who wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post about the global consequences already being felt. McCain wrote, "Whether Trump knows it or not, these efforts are being closely watched by foreign leaders who are already using his words as cover as they silence and shutter one of the key pillars of democracy." John McCain wrote that yesterday. The other Republican senator was the other one from Arizona, coincidentally or not, Jeff Flake, who said it out loud on the Senate floor.
"The enemy of the people was how the President of the United States called the free press in 2017. Mr. President, it is a testament to the condition of our democracy that our own president uses words infamously spoken by Joseph Stalin to describe his enemies. It bears noting that so fraught with malice was the phrase enemy of the people that even Nikita Khrushchev forbade its use, telling the Soviet Communist Party that the phrase had been introduced by Stalin for the purpose of, quote, annihilating such individuals, unquote, who disagreed with the supreme leader. This alone should be the source of great shame for us in this body, especially for those of us in the president's party, for they are shameful, repulsive statements. And of course, the president has it precisely backward. Despotism is the enemy of the people. The free press is the despot's enemy, which makes the free press the guardian of democracy. When a figure in power reflexively calls any press that doesn't suit him fake news, it is that person who should be the figure of suspicion, not the press."
Arizona Republican Jeff Flake on the Senate floor yesterday. Now, if you heard our show on Tuesday, you heard filmmaker Michael Moore say one response to Donald Trump after a year in office should be relentless satire. So in addition to Jeff Flake's very earnest denunciation of despotism yesterday, we had this from Comedy Central last night. Here's the audio track from the start of a video they posted, think Golden Globes or Oscar night, a pre-awards fake news red carpet show.
"Welcome to
the Fake News Awards.
Trump is too busy dealing with whole countries to celebrate the awards, but don't worry, we've got it covered.
We're going to go into the Washington Post to talk to some journalists about what it's like to be nominated. And since it's an award show, we're bringing the red carpet to them."
The glitz, the glamour, the lies. We couldn't believe we were there on the floor of the fake news newsroom.
"Seriously, why did they let us in here? We spoke to Margaret A. Sullivan, media columnist for the Washington Post, about this historic night."
"First time nominee, because it is the first time the awards have existed."
"Yes. Are you so excited?"
"Well, you know, I think the fake news awards are a very bad idea."
"So you're saying it's an honor just to be nominated?"
"No, in fact, it's not only not an honor to be nominated, but these awards are actually a disgrace. And the president has really turned that phrase, fake news, into a weapon against the free press."
"And I disagree."
"Well, you know, you're entitled to say whatever you want."
"Exactly.
But that doesn't mean that the public should believe it."
"Okay, and who are you wearing?" "No comment."
"No comment."
"Interesting."
All right, that from Comedy Central. And with us live now, the interviewee we just heard, Washington Post media columnist Margaret Sullivan, who some of you remember locally from when she was the public editor, like ombudsperson, for the New York Times. Thanks for coming on, Margaret. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you very much, Brian. Always good to speak with you.
And spoiler alert, despite the joke about you being nominated, the president did not name you as a fake news award recipient that I could see. I do want to talk about some of the stories that the president cited, but on the bigger picture first, should people mostly shrug like, there goes Trump being Trump again, or are you as alarmed by the implications of this as Jeff Flake and John McCain?
Well, I don't think we should entirely ignore this. And I was very happy to see Senators McCain and Flake be as strong as they were in defending the role of the press in our democracy. I think it's really important to say this. And the reason that I did this Comedy Central thing is that I think we have to get this message across in a variety of ways to a variety of different audiences. So if I get the opportunity to talk about the value of the press to Comedy Central's audience, I'll take it. I do think this business of talking about fake news when it applies to truthful news coverage is disgraceful and has to be pointed out and has to be countered.
Were you at all ambivalent, I'm just curious, about even taking part in a satire of the fake news awards from Comedy Central there because it threatens to trivialize this deadly serious thing?
Well, yes, somewhat, but I think that it, you know, I thought that I could use the opportunity to get the message out there in a different way. And, you know, I think it's been reasonably well received. So I hope that happened. I mean, I personally decided to play it very, very straight and get the message that I've been trying to pound home, which is about the importance of our free press in democratic society, to say it, you know, despite the fact that they were having fun with the whole idea.
Yeah, and I think that was their confection, because they went on from you to one of your other Washington Post colleagues with their jokey questions, but the very serious answers
exactly
about the threat to democracy. And let's put a fine point on it for people who don't realize it, who think that journalism is just what they see on television or read in the paper or some website, and it's just kind of there about reading and writing. Journalists go to jail and die all over the world for trying to get the truth out in despotic regimes. The Committee to Protect Journalists counted 44 journalists killed in relation to their work in 2017 alone, some while covering wars, some were murdered. And so I'm just going to mention a few of theirs from the Committee to Protect Journalists, Journalism Deaths in 2017 pages. Arkan Sharifi from Kurdistan TV, murdered. Cecilio Pineta Birto, journalist in Mexico, murdered. Christopher Iban Lozada, journalist in the Philippines, murdered. That's just three, and I could go on and on and on from the CPJ Committee to Protect Journalists list. So how much do you agree with McCain about the Trump approach actually making it easier for despots without the checks and balances of our system to thwart real reporting and actually put people's lives in danger?
I think it's very dangerous, and we are seeing the effects of this as despotic leaders of countries actually adopt the same words, fake news, to justify what they're doing and what they have been doing for many years. This danger to journalists is nothing new, but the United States has been in the past a beacon of press rights and free speech. And to the extent that the leader of our country doesn't honor that and doesn't celebrate it, it actually does undermine those principles. And it's very dangerous.
And Trump is a genius in this respect. I gather he passed his cognitive test the other day. But a genius, politically speaking, in this respect, because the term fake news, as you know, surfaced after the election when it became evident how much actual fake news, made-up attacks on Hillary Clinton mostly, often for a profit because people in, I think, Moldova was one of the places, and elsewhere discovered that they could post fake critical news stories about Hillary Clinton. They would get a lot of hits, and they could sell advertising adjacent to these fake news stories. and make money from things that were actually fake. So they got circulated on social media during the campaign if they were well enough done that people took them as real. And then Trump co-opted the term to apply it to real news. And that's almost a new level of cynicism and the kind of assault on truth that Flake was talking about. Have you thought about the purposeful conflation of the real and fake news?
I have. As a matter of fact, I just looked back at this. On January 8th of last year, so more than a year ago, I actually wrote a column that said we should stop using the words fake news to describe false information on the internet or wherever it may be, disinformation, because the term has been weaponized. And it's now in some ways understood to mean any news I don't like or something that's true, but I'd rather not, you know, face it. And so it's become very confusing. And I think we're better off, instead of using the tainted phrase fake news, simply describing things. Is it a conspiracy theory? Is it a hoax? Is it a false? Is it a lie? Is it a false news report or lies in the shape of a news report? It may take a few more syllables, but I think it keeps us from feeding into what has been, as you say, Brian, co-opted and weaponized. It's, you know, it is very disturbing and it's very destructive.
And I think it was Hannah Arendt, chronicler of Nazi propaganda, who said when leaders lie all the time, the effect isn't that people don't believe them. They don't believe anything. So
exactly.
Do you think Trump's point that it's happening, I mean, that you know, do you think that's happening in the United States? Even if Trump hasn't thought it through at that high concept a level, that because he lies as much as he does and as blatantly as he does, that it's not just that people take him with a grain of salt, they don't believe anything?
Yes, I mean, we're starting to see some numbers come up in public opinion polls, including one new one from the Knight Foundation that says that, you know, it's very split along party lines. But among Republicans who were polled, some very high percentage believe that that fake news is anything that's it may be true, but is something that they don't agree with. So yes, it's had an effect in that way, and it's very discouraging.
Margaret Sullivan, media columnist for the Washington Post, with us. I do want to go through some of the items that Trump posted and get your thoughts on issues that they raise or don't raise, these particular new news items. But for context for that, I think we do need to acknowledge the fact that trust in the news media in general is declining long term. Trump is playing into an existing reality, even if he's cynically using it and creating real dangers. How do you see the long-term decline and what it's about in, I think, different groups of Americans for different reasons?
Well, I don't think that we should accept entirely the idea that trust in media is on the decline. It is in some ways, and in other ways, there's a real groundswell of support and, you know, including financial support, like subscribing to newspapers and donating to places like the Committee to Protect Journalists that we've seen over the past year. And, you know, I did some sort of field work over the summer in which I made a point of talking to voters and citizens outside the Beltway about their trust in the media. And, you know, what I found was that, you know, they do feel like they need credible information and, in fact, that they have access to credible information. So I don't think that the idea that, well, trust is on the decline and Trump is really just building on that should be taken at face value.
And listeners, our lines are open for Margaret Sullivan at 212-433, WNYC 433-9692. Let's go through a few of the items that Trump actually posted, because funny enough to me, or for one reason, funny enough to me, much of this list actually shows the media to be very responsible, the mainstream news organizations who he likes to target, like CNN, New York Times, Washington Post, very responsible for correcting mistakes that they become aware of and even punishing their journalists who make serious enough errors. So, for example, his number two item in the fake news awards was ABC demotes Brian Ross, investigative reporter, after a bungled report on Trump and Russia. You familiar with that story?
Yes, of course. And I think what that shows is, as you said, that a mistake, and Brian Ross's mistake was a serious one, is taken seriously. He was suspended, and then he was brought back, under in a different capacity. And I think in all of these cases, journalists try very hard to be accurate, and when they aren't, there are consequences internally and in terms of their reputations. It's a big deal to get something wrong.
Another one, number four. Time magazine falsely reported that President Trump removed a bust of Martin Luther King Jr. from the Oval Office. That was very early on. They did get that one wrong, and then they acknowledged it, right?
Very quickly, too. I believe it was Jim Acosta who reported it. It was a mistake, and we're human beings in journalism. We make mistakes that, it was regrettable, but very quickly corrected. He actually apologized. And, President Trump has continued to hammer on it. And I think that's unjustified.
Another one, Washington Post falsely reported the president's massive sold-out rally in Pensacola, Florida was empty. Dishonest reporter showed picture of empty arena hours before crowds started pouring in. That was the Washington Post's Dave Weigel, who, when that was pointed out, quickly apologized. And I don't know if you reported on that in-house as a Washington Post media columnist. But again, Dave Weigel turned around and basically said, oops, and issued an actual apology to the president on Twitter.
Right. And in both of the cases we're talking about here, it's not only a correction, which is, put out on social media as well as wherever it was published, but, followed up with, and I'm sure I know in the case of Dave Weigel, and I've chatted with him about it, a very sincere feeling that he was regretful about having gotten that wrong and had looked at the wrong picture or something like that. And that's unfortunate when that happens. I think it was Jeff Zucker at CNN who said to his staff, we have to play error-free ball here because we're so much under scrutiny. And that's true, but it's also impossible. So when we do get something wrong, a quick correction, and when warranted, an apology, and, you move on. And so it's very unfortunate to bring this stuff up again a year later when it's, come and gone already.
How about some of the other things on his list? Like, his number one on the fake news awards is a Paul Krugman New York Times column. And we know he's a liberal columnist at the Times, and he gets slammed on this for Paul Krugman says markets will, quote, never recover from Trump. Dow hits record high. And I don't know the full particular Paul Krugman column that he's talking about. Maybe you do, but there certainly were people, and maybe Krugman was one of them, predicting at the beginning of the Trump administration that there would be a big economic hit. And so far, in most traditional growth terms and Dow terms, it's certainly not come about.
Right. Well, as you say, Krugman is an opinion columnist. He's a Nobel Prize-winning economist, and this was his view early on. It doesn't make his column fake. It means possibly, and I haven't refreshed my memory on it, but it may mean that he got it wrong or wasn't entirely right or something like that. But it doesn't mean he made something up.
Let's take a call from somebody who's kinda, I think, gonna support the president's approach to this, and it's Mike in Jersey City. Mike, we always appreciate your calls. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Brian. Let me get you off the speakerphone here. Yeah, Brian, I appreciate after I called in that you guys went over some of the errors, because the reality is, however you feel about Donald Trump, or the orange one, as I like to think of him, he has a point, okay? Other than the first fake news award, which I thought was the weakest, the one to Krugman, these are significant misstatements of fact, and they invariably serve an ongoing narrative on the left that the president is out of his mind, that he's a virulent racist, on and on and on. And I mean, I agree that the freedom of the press is essential to the functioning of a democracy, but the social compact that comes with that is that the press at least has some obligation to attempt to tell the truth, and this is important, get it right the first time. The Brian Ross case is a perfect example. They dropped that story in the middle of a key Senate vote, and the notion that they got those dates wrong, those of us out in the hinterlands watch this, and we are increasingly having difficulty believing that people on the left like to make fun of Fox News, but those of us who don't call ourselves liberals, the rest of the media looks like the reverse version of Fox News. And I really think you guys need to get your act together, saying, gee, we screwed up on a really big story, and somebody sent a Twitter out later on. I mean, we know how that works. 90% of the people will remember the news story or the narrative it supports, and they may someday learn that it was corrected, but not often. And I think that the final indictment is the fact that the President of the United States is able to subsume the inferior performance of the media of late, or the press, let's use that term, and I think it has been a distinctly inferior performance in the last year or two, okay, that's an indictment on the standards that the press is using. They should not be in a position where a politician, any politician, should be able to exploit their errors for the level of political gain that the orange one is in fact exploiting them for.
And Mike, let me get some thoughts for you from Margaret Sullivan and also from myself. Margaret, I'm curious to hear yours. One thing that I would push back on is just that there is some kind of crisis of factuality that the big national mainstream news organizations are getting things wrong more than they did, and they're getting things wrong all the time. I mean, they have, through investigative reporting, dug up so much about Trump administration and Trump campaign things that are overwhelmingly true and would not otherwise have been known, that I think the scorecard, if you're just keeping a straight score of things reported true versus things reported that are false, and I don't just mean events that you can observe, press conferences, statements, whatever, but things that have took real reporting, overwhelmingly true. And yet, Margaret, Mike brings up important points about getting it right, and I think you'd agree as a media columnist that corrections aren't always given the prominent place that they deserve after something, even significant somethings, are gotten wrong.
That's right, and Mike does make good points, but I think, as you do, Brian, that overall the reporting of the past year or so has been outstanding. I mean, there's been a back and forth between the Washington Post and the New York Times, breaking important stories that have proven to be correct and that need to be done. Do we wish that we could never get anything wrong? Absolutely. The New York Times, which I'm familiar with, as you said, as the former public editor, has a department devoted to doing corrections. Now, does that mean that they have a tremendous amount of mistakes? To me, what that means is that they know there will be mistakes, and they take them seriously enough to want to correct them quickly and accurately and set the record straight. So, journalism is made up of human beings, and we sometimes err, and sometimes badly. And I agree that Brian Ross's error was a particularly bad one, and he's made others that have been bad. And you know, it's I think it has been taken seriously. So on balance, I can't agree with Mike, but I understand his points.
And on the one other point that he makes about Fox News sort of versus everyone else, there's this sense that Trump supporters have, which is, you know, it's sort of a third of the country, and Trump is losing even his base sort of drip by drip if you look at the polls over time. But there's a core there of about a third of the country that's solid, and Fox News does very well in ratings, partly on the belief that the rest of the a lot of the press that puts itself out there as objective really does have a liberal bias. And that's not even to say MSNBC, which more brands itself as a liberal network, or CNN, which may officially or unofficially be branding itself for commercial purposes as more anti-Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we've seen again from these public opinion polls that those who are in opposition to the press and supporting the president and very critical of the mainstream news media, or what I like to call the reality-based press, are watching Fox and are influenced by that point of view very heavily. And the rest of the respondents and the sort of the rest of the country are much more spread out among different news organizations where they can compare and contrast. And I think what you'd hear from the Fox viewers is, well, that doesn't matter because they're all lefty and they're all saying the same thing, even though they're different brands. But I think that's actually not the case, that you do get different points of view, you do get different kinds of reporting. So there is a group that's kind of got as its core media source Fox News and other conservative outlets that kind of bounce off of Fox. And then there's, you know, everything else.
And here's a critique to the conversation we're having from the left, from a listener on Twitter who says, incredible to hear Brian Lehrer's segment describe the corporate press as the free press. So to this listener on Twitter, the Washington Post, CNN, the New York Times, they're the corporate press. And to call them the free press is to this listener kind of missing the point because of whatever pressures, obviously economic pressures, the corporate press is under. And I think, at least again, to take cable news as an example, we know that there's a positioning there in some respects, and Fox News certainly does it, but the others also do it, that takes that very much into account. That's looking at ratings kind of minute by minute, hour by hour, in a way that maybe the New York Times and the Washington Post are not.
Well, there is, you know, there certainly are business imperatives in all of these news organizations. I will say that my experience working at the Times and the Post, I have not felt, and I don't believe there is, an influence from the corporate owners saying, you know, do this or do that. We don't care as much about the journalism as we do about the ratings or something like that. Having said that, I think that particularly during the campaign, we saw news organizations of many stripes allowing the Trump campaign to get a lot of free, sort of exposure, free and not very critical exposure, because it was driving ratings. So, you know, there's certainly some truth to that. And I would also push back against the idea that somehow the corporate overlords are running things editorially. That has not been my experience.
And another listener on Twitter asks, how challenging is it for journalists to work in an asymmetric environment? You all make mistakes, and I can't follow the rest of this tweet down the electronic rabbit hole, but it's obvious where this person is going, saying you all make mistakes and correct them. Trump makes mistakes, quote unquote mistakes, and doesn't correct them. So the asymmetric environment. And kind of to that point, here's another clip of Republican Senator Jeff Flake on the Senate floor yesterday.
Of course, a major difference between politicians and the free press is that the free press usually corrects itself when it's made a mistake. Politicians don't. No longer can we compound attacks, the attacks on truth with our silent acquiescence. No longer can we turn a blind eye or a deaf ear to those assaults on our institutions. And, Mr. President, an American president who cannot take criticism, who must constantly deflect and distort and distract, who must find someone else to blame, is charting a very dangerous path. And a Congress that fails to act as a check on the president adds to that danger. Now we are told via Twitter that today the president intends to announce his choice for the, quote, most corrupt and dishonest media awards. It beggars belief that an American president would engage in such a spectacle. But here we are.
Jeff Flake yesterday alone among Republicans with John McCain in critiquing the fake news awards that Trump posted last night as something that's actually dangerous to democracy. We have just a couple of minutes left with Margaret Sullivan, Washington Post media columnist. And Margaret, you know, I noticed that it's not just a sort of defensive conspiracy of silence among other Republicans not to say anything about this for fear of loss of popularity among the base or whatever, but that the Trump fake news awards, far from being his own radical authoritarian outlier thing, was posted on, of all places, an official Republican Party website that asked for donations to the party right there on the same homepage as the fake news awards. So this is not just Trump authoritarianism, but now the mainstream Republican Party policy?
That's right. I mean, basically the Republicans in Congress are at least tacitly, and in some cases more than tacitly, in agreement or in acquiescence with the president on this. And that's very regrettable, which is why it is encouraging and hopeful to see at least these two Republican senators come up and say their piece in such a passionate and important and true way.
And as your cell phone quality deteriorates, I guess we're going to end the segment just in the nick of time. So we thank Margaret Sullivan, Washington Post media columnist, for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.